There is this incredibly dangerous yet completely universal feeling of relief that happens the second you finally spend money to solve a problem.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you identify a risk, you buy the premium software, you install the shiny new security tool, and suddenly you just feel safe.
Right. It's like this, it's a dopamine hit, basically, of making a purchase. It tricks the brain into thinking the problem is resolved simply because, well, a transaction occurred.
Exactly. But feeling secure and actually being secure are two completely different realities.
Totally different.
And today, we're looking at how that specific psychological trap is just destroying cybersecurity for local businesses. So, for everyone listening, welcome to another deep dive. Today, we are digging into CISA ransomware guidance for Orange County small businesses, specifically looking ahead to 2026.
And we are doing this by looking under the hood of this really fascinating, highly specific internal document from an IT managed service provider named Technigian. And I want to clarify, this isn't a public relations piece or a blog post. It's their actual internal operational and content roadmap for June 2026, what they classify internally as week W19.
Which is such a cool perspective to get. It outlines their whole strategy for taking this dense, honestly intimidating federal guidance from CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and translating it into a tangible, repeatable checklist for local businesses.
Right.
Okay, let's unpack this. The mission today is really to figure out how a business takes these massive federal standards and turns them into daily operating habits, things that actually protect them, rather than just acting as a theoretical checklist sitting in some digital drawer.
Well, to understand how to operationalize that federal guidance, the Technigian document makes it really clear that we have to confront that initial dopamine trap you mentioned.
Yeah, the buying trap.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is the source highlights that most organizations they do not struggle because they lack tools. They struggle because their ransomware readiness exists entirely, quote, in theory.
In theory, I love that phrasing. That means leadership assumes they are protected just because they bought something, but they haven't actually pressure tested the reality of that protection at all.
Precisely.
It reminds me of buying a state-of-the-art fire extinguisher.
Okay.
Like, you spend top dollar, you mount it on the wall in the hallway, and you feel great about it, but then you lock it inside a metal box, and no one in the building actually knows the combination to the padlock.
That is a perfect analogy.
Right. Having the tool in the building isn't the same thing as being prepared to fight a fire.
And the document provides some really specific evidence of what that locked box looks like in the digital world. I mean, businesses proudly check the box for having backups, but those backups are completely untested.
Wow.
Yeah, they might be corrupted, or, they might take three rings to restore, which would just bankrupt the company anyway.
Oh,
Or
absolutely.
they check the box for multi-factor authentication or MFA, but the text specifically notes it's unverified.
Wait, hold on. Let's pause on that. What does unverified MFA actually mean for a business? Because I think a lot of people, myself included sometimes, assume that if the little text message code is turned on, they are safe.
Yeah, it's a super common misconception. So, unverified MFA means you turned on the feature for your main application, sure, but you left legacy authentication enabled on the back end.
Oh, I see.
So, for example, your modern email app requires a fingerprint and a code, but an old, outdated mail protocol that's still running on your server somewhere doesn't.
That's
It
terrifying.
is. Hackers don't bother trying to steal your fingerprint. They just route their login attempt through the old protocol and bypass the MFA entirely. You have the tool, but the implementation is entirely theoretical.
So the business is relying on manual effort, incomplete visibility, and just sort of assuming the software is doing its job automatically.
Which leads to the fatal mistake of measuring activity instead of measuring outcomes. The document points out that businesses love to measure activity.
Oh, big time.
They publish a new security page on their intranet, or they buy a new software tool, or they hold a, I don't know, a 2-hour planning meeting. They look at that activity and say, "We did it. We are secure."
I gotta say, I struggle a bit with this activity versus outcomes argument. I'm putting myself in the shoes of like a 15-person company here in Orange County.
Sure.
Buying the security tool often takes up their entire IT budget for the quarter. The source document says stopping after the purchase is dangerous, but frankly, sometimes these small businesses are completely out of money and bandwidth just from buying the thing.
Right.
So what outcome can they realistically measure if they've exhausted their resources just getting the tool in the door?
Well, the harsh reality, and what the document argues, is that if the resources are entirely depleted by the purchase was actually the wrong move.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Activity without operational integration is just a sunk cost. The source argues that treating security as a single task rather than an ongoing discipline is where the money is truly wasted.
Because it just gets outdated.
Exactly. Without long-term ownership and review, those exact same vulnerabilities quietly return. The moment your stab changes or a vendor shifts, or think about this, someone connects a new personal phone to the company Wi-Fi. That expensive one-time fix is instantly obsolete.
That is so true. Theoretical readiness is just an illusion. And, you know, when we think about that illusion shattering, we tend to picture a dramatic Hollywood hacking scene.
Oh, yeah, the guy in the hoodie.
Right. Red sirens, a skull and crossbones flashing on the computer monitors, some guy typing furiously in a dark room while the CEO screams.
The reality is much quieter and, in many ways, honestly, much more insidious. A lack of operational security doesn't always announce itself with a massive ransomware demand.
What does it look like then?
The day-to-day symptoms of poor readiness are described in the text as, quote, friction for employees and uncertainty for leadership.
Friction. Here's where it gets really interesting. The text pulls out a critical insight about how this internal cyber friction actually bleeds outward and destroys customer trust.
It really does.
When you install a poorly configured security patch on your network, your customers subconsciously feel the result of that.
Let's look at what that actually looks like for a business, specifically in Orange County, which the document notes is a hyper-competitive market.
Extremely competitive, yeah.
Right. So imagine a local law firm there that spends thousands of dollars a month on marketing to acquire high-value clients. A prospect tries to load the firm's secure client portal to upload a confidential document.
Okay, standard procedure.
But because the firm's servers are bogged down with bloated, heavily conflicting security agents that no one is actively managing, the page takes 45 seconds to load.
Which feels like a lifetime online. It probably times out or it throws some generic error code.
Exactly. And the client doesn't sit there and think, oh, their endpoint detection software is poorly configured.
No, they don't care about that.
Right? They think this firm is unprofessional and their systems are broken. They lose trust instantly.
And the search engines notice this too. This is where the Technogene document ties IT operations directly to marketing and SEO, which blew my mind a little bit.
It's a huge connection.
If your website or client portal is hosted on a network suffering from cyber friction, the time to first byte, which is the millisecond measurement Google uses to see how fast your server responds, it just plummets. Mm. Google's algorithms notice the slow response times. They notice the poor user experience. Your search rankings drop. Your leads dry up.
And the business owners in this market might be losing revenue day after day, wondering why their marketing is failing, when the reality is their digital foundation is generating too much operational friction.
It's all connected.
Weak execution quietly drains visibility and trust long before a hacker ever even breaches the perimeter.
So the cost of ignoring this isn't just the big, scary threat of a ransom payment. It's a quiet, daily bleed of customer trust and revenue. But how does a small or mid-sized business actually fix this without completely paralyzing their daily operations? Because complex IT projects are notorious for bringing business to a complete standstill.
Right. Nobody wants to shut down for a week to fix IT.
Right.
That's why the Technogene document maps out a strict three-phase implementation roadmap designed specifically to avoid that paralysis. It actually ignores generic national advice and focuses purely on local operational context.
Okay.
Phase one is called narrow execution.
Let's break that down. What does narrow execution mean in a practical sense for a small team?
The guiding principle is that the task must be, quote, narrow enough to complete and important enough to matter.
I like that.
Yeah. Instead of trying to boil the ocean and secure everything at once, you review the absolute basics before an event occurs. The document lists focusing on backups, MFA, patching protocols, endpoint security, incident response contacts, and recovery priorities.
Let's unpack the mechanisms behind a few of those. When we say patching protocols, we aren't just talking about those annoying pop-ups asking you to restart your computer, right?
No, not at all.
Hackers use automated bots that just constantly scan the internet looking for specific known software flaws. It's like a thief writing a program that automatically jiggles every single doorknob in a massive neighborhood looking for a specific brand of lock that was recalled yesterday.
That's exactly how it works. And a patching protocol is simply the habit of ensuring Every lock is replaced the moment the manufacturer tells you it's faulty.
You don't wait until Friday.
No, you do it the second the vulnerability is announced.
And what about endpoint security? How does that fit into narrow execution?
That moves beyond traditional antivirus software. Traditional antivirus looks for known viruses. Endpoint security monitors the actual behavior of the devices, the laptops, the phones, the servers.
So it's looking at what the computer is actually doing.
Yes. If a laptop suddenly starts trying to encrypt thousands of files at 2 a.m. on a Sunday, the endpoint security recognizes the behavior as malicious and isolates that laptop from the rest of the network instantly.
Wow. Okay. And the crucial rule for phase one in the text is that the output of these tasks must be a documented improvement. It can't just be a recommendation.
Right.
What does a documented improvement actually look like on, say, a random Tuesday afternoon for an IT tech?
Well, it looks like a physical or digital record of proof.
Yeah.
It isn't just an email saying, hey, I checked the backups.
Because anyone can write that email.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A documented improvement is a log entry that says something like, restored a test folder from server A to a separate environment. The restore took 14 minutes. The files opened successfully. Attached is the screenshot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You have moved from theoretical readiness to proven capability.
Fixing the lock on the door is useless if you never check to see if it actually stays locked when you push on it. Which brings us to phase two, adding measurement. Now, we established earlier that measuring activity is a trap.
Yes, a big trap.
So what metrics actually matter for a small Orange County business?
You have to measure outcomes that affect the business directly. Things like response time to a security alert, risk reduction over a 30-day period.
Okay.
The number of employee support tickets regarding system slowdowns is a big. One fewer tickets means less cyber friction. You even measure the stronger lead quality and cleaner operational reporting that comes from a stabilized system.
But measuring those metrics brings up a kind of painful reality for small teams.
Which is?
Who actually looks at the dashboard. I mean, if the technical owner sees response times lagging, but no one is officially responsible for fixing it, the measurement is just useless. The dashboard just becomes a monument to a failing system.
It really does, and that leads directly into phase three, standardizing ownership.
Once
the improvement is live and the metrics are set, someone has to own the maintenance, the reporting, and the vendor coordination. This is really the only way a 30-day project becomes a repeatable operating habit.
I am putting myself in the shoes of a local manufacturer or like a retail business.
Okay.
My team is already stretched to the breaking point, demanding standardized ownership and constant logging. It just feels like creating a mountain of bureaucratic red tape for people who are already completely overworked.
It's a very valid concern, and businesses push back on this a lot. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the documentation required here is intentionally minimal.
Really? Minimal?
Yeah, the document is clear that we're not talking about a 300-page manual that takes weeks to write and nobody ever reads.
Thank goodness.
We are talking about a simple checklist, a short summary of decisions made, and a verification log.
So it's just a record of the current state, the systems involved, who is responsible, and the next review date.
Precisely. The goal isn't to create bureaucracy. The goal is business continuity. You want to ensure that when your current IT manager leaves or you switch to a new vendor, the future team members don't have to restart the exact same discovery process from scratch.
That makes total sense.
They shouldn't have to spend a month figuring out where the backups live and who has the password.
Absolutely. Because a roadmap is completely useless if you don't know who is driving the car and you don't know who is paying for the gas.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the internal dynamics of alignment and budget. The Technegean document introduces a brilliant structural safeguard to handle this whole operation. They advocate for a dual ownership model.
Splitting the responsibility. Instead of throwing the entire CISA guidance document at the IT guy and walking away, there are two distinct owners, one business owner and one technical or marketing owner.
It's kind of like building a bank vault.
Okay, I like this.
The business owner decides what needs to go inside the vault, who is allowed to have the keys, and during what hours the vault can be accessed. The technical owner is the person who actually welds the steel and installs the tumblers. If the welder is allowed to make the business decisions, you end up with a vault that is technically impenetrable, but completely impossible for the tellers to use during business hours.
Friction goes through the roof.
Exactly.
And if the business owner tries to do the welding, the vault falls apart the second a thief taps it with a hammer.
Right.
The business owner defines the why. What are we protecting? Customer data, operational uptime, search visibility. The implementation owner defines the practical how. What are the software steps we need to take today to secure that data without slowing down the tellers?
This dual ownership totally prevents the project from failing in translation. If only the business side owns it, the project stays abstract. If only the technical side owns it, it gets bogged down in jargon, and leadership can't evaluate if it's actually helping the business at all.
Pairing them up creates the internal alignment necessary for real employee adoption. People follow a security process much more willingly when they understand what it protects.
Yeah, for sure.
If employees know a new password policy is specifically protecting the client data that keeps the company profitable, they tolerate the friction. If it just feels like IT being annoying, they will find workarounds.
They absolutely will. Then there's the reality of paying for the welding on this vault. Budgeting.
Always the hard part.
Always. But the source offers some incredibly sharp financial advice here. It mandates separating the budget into two distinct categories: urgent fixes and maturity improvements.
Urgent fixes are about stopping the bleeding. These deal with immediate threats to your uptime, your compliance, or your customer experience.
Like an open door.
Yes. If you have an unpatched server facing the public internet, that is an urgent fix. Maturity improvements, on the other hand, are about building muscle over time. This is investing in automation, employee security training, and better long-term governance.
When leadership sits down to discuss the budget for those urgent fixes, the document insists the conversation has to start with one specific question. What is the cost of inaction?
This raises an important question for leadership. Imagine that board meeting. The IT director asks for $10,000 to implement a robust endpoint security system. Leadership balks at the price.
Of course they do.
The IT director shouldn't argue about the technical superiority of the software. They should ask, what happens if we leave our customer database vulnerable for another quarter? What level of operational friction or lost search visibility or potential legal liability is acceptable to us?
When you frame it around the cost of inaction, prioritization becomes entirely objective. You aren't just spending money on IT. You are buying down measurable risk.
Exactly.
And for a lot of small Orange County businesses, they are going to hire outside partners to execute this work managed service providers like Technigian. The source is very, very firm on holding these vendors accountable.
Vendors cannot operate in a black box. The document insists that partners shouldn't just be executing tasks in the dark. They need to provide plain language reporting.
Plain language.
Yes. Leadership should never have to decode deeply technical network logs to understand if their security actually improved.
A good partner connects the technical implementation details directly to the business outcomes. They don't say, we configured the firewall rules on port 443.
Which means nothing to a CEO.
Right. They say, we secured the client portal, reducing the risk of unauthorized access, and we improved the load time by 15%, which will help your SEO. They help the business understand the progress made and the remaining risk.
Which forces the business to define what success actually looks like at the end of this 30-day roadmap. The text provides a surprisingly grounding answer here. The strongest signal of success is not perfection.
Right, because perfection is impossible.
Exactly. You are never going to be perfectly secure against every conceivable threat.
The strongest signal is controlled progress. That means the team can explicitly explain what changed on the network, why it changed, how they physically verified it, and what happens next month. The CISA ransomware guidance has officially moved from a scary, abstract federal document into a managed local business capability. You know what changed, you know why, and you know what's next.
Moving from a state of theoretical readiness into a state of controlled progress is the ultimate takeaway of this entire framework.
So, what does this all mean for you listening right now? Let's trace the journey we've just taken. We started by confronting the very dangerous illusion of theoretical security. The dopamine hit of buying a tool while ignoring untested backups and unverified MFA.
Right.
We unpacked the hidden business costs of that illusion. How bloated, poorly managed systems create cyber friction that actively tanks your search engine rankings, slows down your portals, and quietly destroys customer trust in a very competitive market.
From there, we looked at how to implement a practical three-phase roadmap. Narrow execution ensures you focus on critical basics like patching protocols and endpoint monitoring.
And then adding measurement.
Right. Adding measurement forces you to track outcomes like response times and support tickets rather than just activity. And standardizing ownership through minimal, repeatable documentation ensures the progress actually outlives employee turnover.
We saw how building a bank vault requires a dual-owned action plan pairing a business leader with a technical leader to ensure the work actually serves the company. We learned to separate urgent fixes from maturity improvements and to always budget based on the cost of inaction.
It changes the whole conversation.
It really does. And finally, we highlighted the absolute necessity of demanding plain language reporting from your vendors to guarantee that controlled progress.
So whether you are an IT manager prepping for a massive strategy meeting, or you are a local business owner trying to figure out why your digital leads are drying up, the core reality remains exactly the same.
Yeah.
Knowledge, federal guidance, and incredibly expensive software tools are entirely useless unless you test them, unless you measure their impact, and unless someone in your building officially owns them.
A complex disaster recovery plan sitting on a server won't restore your customer database. Only a tested, repeatable operating habit can do that.
Absolutely.
Which leaves us with one final thought to mull over long after this deep dive ends. We talked earlier about that state-of-the-art fire extinguisher locked in a metal box where no one knows the combination.
Yeah.
As our daily operations become increasingly, almost entirely reliant on automated digital tools, have we stopped trusting the discipline of our actual human processes and instead started placing our blind faith in the shiny dashboards of technologies we've never actually tested in a crisis?